without Hunter. It's 7:04 now, and we'll just call the meeting to order. So the agenda is super straightforward for tonight. Actually, before diving into the agenda, John Ricketson, since you're our member of the public here, is there any public comment you'd like to offer?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Okay. So no public comment, then jumping right into the agenda review and minutes approval. The agenda really only has one agenda item on it, and that is to keep moving ahead with the highway piece of the capital plan. And without Hunter, I think we should, you know, hold off on making any decisions, but we can at least work through some of the topics. I've got a little bit of information to share tonight, but are there any adjustments to the agenda, John Moore, we should make?
No, I'm fine with it.
And Hunter had a suggestion for the minutes. He said they look good, but that we should offer, that we should write into the minutes that John Ricketson and Neil expressed their interest in joining the committee. And actually we should add Susan Burgess, although I haven't followed up with her since then. And that will, you know, the first regular meeting of the select board in October, that will bring that to the select board for official appointment. But other than that, John Moore, any edits to the minutes?
No, I agree with Hunter that to add that. I thought Hunter had something else too that he
wanted. Oh, did he?
I know that was one thing. Let me see here.
Okay.
No, I guess his only comment was that we're still in the data collection mode. And I think we made a comment at the last meeting that we were going to collect data, but we really couldn't vote on anything until Neil and John and any other interested people were voted in.
Yeah, I think that's wise, just to wait until we've got the full committee and then we can debate these things and yep. come to agreement. But for the time being, we can certainly, you know, start working through it.
Yep.
So yeah, I can adjust the minutes.
That doesn't need to be in the minutes. Let's just add that one part that Hunter pointed out.
Okay. All right. Well, I think, John Moore, unless you've got something you want to start off with, I've got some information I can share. I'm going to attempt to share my screen here one time again, see if I can have any better luck this time. Mail, Outlook, Finder. This is really super strange. Okay, I see. Okay, I see what's going on. All right, so I'm going to share my screen and oh, here's Hunter. Okay. Hey, Hunter. Hunter, we just got started about 4 minutes ago.
Hey, Scott. Okay. Yeah, sorry I'm late again. I always have trouble finding the forgetting that the login information is on the agenda.
Yeah, no problem. We haven't really done anything yet. I was trying to share my screen and I'm having some sharing issues. Oh, there we go. Now it's working. So what you should see, hopefully if it's working right, is an Excel spreadsheet with a bunch of numbers. Let me know if you're not seeing that.
Yep, I'm seeing it.
Okay, so what this is this is a spreadsheet that the select board put together that we used to make our decision on, it was December 4th of 2019 when we made the decision to buy two new trucks. So we bought a 10-wheeler and a 6-wheeler. And the ones that are highlighted in the spreadsheet are the bids that we accepted, the bids that we awarded. So we, for the 10-wheeler, we awarded Clark, the international body for a sale price of $187,437, added on with a 5-year extended warranty, plus $57,777 for trade-in with a net price of $138,840. The six-wheeler came at a sale price down below at $159,785 with a extended warranty of 9,000, 5-year extended warranty of 9,180. Trade-in, $62,777 with a total net price of $106,188. The reason, there's a couple of reasons why I'm showing you this information, and we can refer back to the last version of the Highway Capital Plan. But part of the reason, one of the reasons for showing these numbers is our net price on these truck purchases, even though both of them are different spec, especially the 10-wheeler. I think when we pull up the last version of the Highway Capital Plan, it should show that our net price that we came out either close to or under our projections for our capital plan. And then all, but I think also importantly is the trade-in, because that represents residual value. And it will also be interesting to see how that compares to our projections. So with that, I'm gonna try to hang on a second.
Oh, Scott, could I just ask a question?
Sure. Yeah.
So trade-in, is that like projected trade-in at the end of the 5 years?
This was actual trade-in.
So we traded in a different vehicle.
We traded in two trucks. We haven't gotten the trucks yet. They're in the process of being built as we speak. We haven't taken delivery on them yet. But when we negotiated the contract for these two truck purchases, that was what we negotiated for trade-in.
Okay.
So I'm going to stop sharing my screen, and then I'm going to share. I'm going to put up the last version of the Highway Capital Plan, and then I'm going to share that.
Scott, were the trade-ins, were we trading in the same type of vehicle that we were purchasing on both of those?
In one case, sort of. In the other case, no. And what I mean by sort of is we traded one six-wheeler in for another six-wheeler. The difference was that we switched from a four-wheel drive model to a two-wheel drive model. And John Moore, you know a lot more about that than I do. But we had some historical issues with the front ends on the four-wheel drive vehicles that caused us a lot of consternation. And so Jimmy Potter, upon recommendation of the road foreman and also members of the select board, we decided to go to a two-wheel drive model on both trucks. But they're one of them is the same in that they're both six-wheelers. The big difference is that, and this is actually, if you remember, John and Hunter, a couple of years ago, independently, we had talked about 10-wheelers, if you remember that conversation, that Verschier, back when we had talked about Verschier going to a 10-wheeler on one of their routes, we decided to go with a 10-wheeler this time. So there was pretty strong consensus about trading in one of the six wheelers for a 10 wheeler.
So that the first trade-in, where was the lower trade-in value? Was that a A six-wheeler that was traded in for a 10-wheeler?
Yeah, and it was a truck that was in, it was the older truck of the two in worse mechanical shape, but we still got pretty decent trade-in on it. I got to get myself reoriented to the spreadsheet here.
I guess the only comment, though, is that on the six-wheeler that you bought for $159,000, $91.80 for the extra warranty, $62 for the trade, you really didn't buy an apples and apples truck. You bought a six-wheeler that had two-wheel drive rather than a six-wheeler that had four-wheel drive. So right. our spreadsheets were based on getting four-wheel drive trucks. Yeah.
Yeah, that you're right, John. So what I want to call your attention to is, and I haven't done this math until right now, so we're kind of doing it live here. But 57, so just to give you numbers here. You know what? That's funny. So I think December 2019. I know what, hang on a second. I know what happened. So when we already knew the truck purchases the last time we did the highway capital plan. So actually what I want to go back to, and the only reason I'm doing what I'm about to do right now is to see what our how close our projections were for trade-in on the two trucks. So our original trade-in estimate before ordering the most recent trucks was, I gotta do the math here, 56,406,931,101. So our original projection for trade-in back before we knew the trade-in values, our projection was gonna be $100,139 for the trade-in of those two vehicles that we just traded in. And we ended up at 120,554. So we were 20,000, about 20,000 and change better than our estimate. And to me, all that means is that our estimating method for residual value is fairly accurate. I think we did 35%, if I remember correctly. I have to find one of the old spreadsheets. But if I recall correctly, we were factoring in on a 7-year cycle. I think we were factoring in 35%. I'll have to go back and look at the spreadsheet more carefully. But the point I wanted to bring up is that our original planning, despite the fact that we ended up purchasing not apples to apples trucks, in fact, they came in cheaper, but our trade-in values, our trade-in estimating was actually pretty good.
Actually, the value that I show on that spreadsheet was 37% for six years. And
37%, not 35.
I think so.
Okay. So I think where I'm going with that is what I'm trying to do here is take our spreadsheet and break it down into pieces and verify which of the pieces are still good from a planning standpoint and which pieces need tweaking. And so I think when we're, and this may not be true for some of the other pieces of equipment, you know, like the grader, for instance, and we can talk about that more, or the loader or the excavator for that matter. But at least as it relates to the dump trucks, are estimating at 37% is pretty good. So that's one piece of our puzzle that I think we can kind of check off and say, all right, you know, from building out our model, working with the 37% residual value is a pretty good methodology. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just want to check and make sure, because I've got that down listed here at 6 years, and I think we were figuring 7 years. So I want to make sure that we had so many spreadsheets floating around. So
right.
let's verify that before the next meeting.
Yeah, we can double check that. I'll
double check that.
I think I pulled up the.
It might have been 35% on 7 years and 37% on 6 years. I don't know. I just got listed down here 6 years at 37, and I don't know why we had six. But I got a whole bunch of those spreadsheets. I just have to figure it out here.
Yeah. Some of them minus I-9. Okay. 50. I'll have to go. We can both do the same exercise, John, but.
Yeah, we'll check it.
Somewhere probably in that 35 to 37% range.
Yep.
And so I think for the dump trucks, when we do our planning, John Ricketson, I think you had your hand up.
Yeah, I'm just sorry. Just a quick question. Part of it, John already answered, because I heard him say six. I wasn't sure which. So yeah, I could see how that could vary based on how many years you're assuming. But so I guess when we go in.
I'm sorry, John. Go ahead.
I guess that was really my question. Is 7 years kind of our assumption, or is that up for discussion as well? You know, about 5 years, 7 years, as needed? I don't know.
I think we're putting that on the table here, whether it's 5, 6, or 7. But this is just my personal viewpoint, is I think we should come at it methodically. And kind of let the numbers tell us what the answer is. But, you know, as far as I think what we're talking about is putting on the table what it should be. Because we're hearing, I think we should document too what we're hearing that drives us toward one number or the other. And right now, as far as I've heard, or at least one data point we're hearing, is that the electronics in these trucks start to have issues at somewhere around the 5 year mark. I went back and listened to the conversation. There are different viewpoints on this, and none of it is conclusive, but some of the feedback that was offered is that there's a point where in these newer trucks that the electronics start to cause problems. And then at some point, particularly after the warranty period, you don't want to be messing with having electronics issues. That's kind of the gist of the conversation I heard.
So
John Moore, is that? Oh, so go ahead, Hunter.
Sorry. I was just going to ask, So with the extended warranty, does that give us a 5 year warranty? Is that what we've had?
It's 5 or 100,000 miles.
Okay.
So I looked at the warranty information today from Clark's, and the way it's written is 5 years or 100,000 miles.
and you're not going to hit 100,000 miles.
Right.
So. Right. So in all likelihood, 5 years is going to expire before we hit 100,000, right, John?
Right.
Definitely. I think we checked the miles, and the miles are historically been in the 30,000, 40,000. Right. So.
Right. We don't even get close to it.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things we talked about loosely a little bit last time is, and this is one of our research tasks, is can we buy extended warranties beyond 5 years that would cover everything we need to cover, including the things that we expect would go wrong? And because I guess the way I look at it is, I think it's a valid argument to say, and this is the argument that's been proffered, we start to run into a number of issues, especially electronics. And when they're no longer under warranty, it just becomes too expensive and too much of a pain to try and do the maintenance on them. So it's better just to jettison them at five and not deal with the headaches that they're no longer under warranty and get rid of them while they still have whatever residual value at 5 years. But then that leads into some questions like, well, can we buy extended warranties beyond 5 years? Or these are different trucks than we've had before. We had Freightliners. Right now, we currently have Freightliners and Western Star. And so we're moving to International. And so it's a bit of an unknown whether we're going to encounter. We know we're not going to run into front end issues related to the four-wheel drive. That was the big reason for moving to standard rather than four-wheel drive. What we don't know is some of the other issues we've run into with the Freightliners and the Western Star, whether we'll run into those with the Internationals. And that's maybe where some homework can come into play.
Yeah, I think that just as a comment on the four-wheel drive, there's two kinds of four-wheel drive. There's the Merriman four-wheel drive, which I think I mentioned last time, which is designed to be run all the time. And then there's the, and that is so expensive that most towns don't buy those. And then the other one is an on-demand four-wheel drive. But the one thing that Pomfret did is run chains on the front wheels. And if you've ever driven a truck in four-wheel drive and without chains on it and you turn a corner, the wheels skid around and there's quite a bit of torque on the front end. And if you've got chains on the front end, it's even worse. I called Bridgewater today just to get a comment on what they're doing and what their experience was. They have four-wheel drive trucks, but they don't run chains on the front end, but they've had similar problems to what we've had with the electronics, and they're trading them out in 5 years. And Lynn Bertram, who's the chair of the select board, mentioned that their problems are similar to all the other towns in the area. So I didn't ask her which towns. I guess we can call some other towns, but so that was the one research that I did today. I guess she mentioned also that one other comment is that the trucks that we buy today or they buy today are somewhat under nutted in terms of the truck is spec'd out to do more than the truck is really perhaps designed for. In other words, I guess maybe it's a way that International and other companies can cut down on costs and put a less expensive frame in and that sort of thing. I don't know, but she mentioned besides the electronic issues, just that the trucks weren't built as well as they were in the past. I guess we've got to get more information about specifics, but.
And they're running internationals, John?
I don't know what they're running. They just said that they're, and I guess I don't know the answer. I guess the other comment, at least from my experience on the warranty, you can get a 5-year warranty bumper to bumper. Most of the, just my experience on cars, and it may be different with trucks, but if you buy an aftermarket warranty, it does not come from the manufacturer. It comes from a third party, and typically it is not bumper to bumper, and it covers a lot of crap that doesn't really break down. So, you know, it doesn't include wipers, and it doesn't include a lot of stuff. And I don't know, I guess you said, Scott, we can research that. I have not researched that. But I do know on the ones that I get phone calls on my cars, when it runs out of warranty, it's typically a third party that's calling me. And if you read the fine print, it typically doesn't cover stuff that breaks down.
And when I was talking about extended, I was thinking manufacturer's warranty, if they even do that. I don't know if they do.
Not to my knowledge, but we can check.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I would advocate for is that, you know, we do all our data collection, get all the cards on the table and kind of add it up and see where the data leads us. And, you know, I think we've got some preliminary, I don't want to call them conclusions, but we've got some preliminary input that tells us things that we might want to verify, but I think we've got some pretty good notions out there already about somewhere the sweet spot is in between 5 and 7 years, it seems. Just as John, you probably remember this too, is I think this is a factor here for Pomfret, an unfortunate one, but I spend a lot of time in New Hampshire at my family's property there. And so I go to the town garage there, and it's interesting. And looking at their trucks and talking to their road crew guys, and they keep their trucks longer, but they also have more maintenance capability than we do. So I think that's another factor, is that by and large, except for routine preventative maintenance, we're almost exclusively reliant on outside maintenance. Right, John Moore?
Yep.
So we don't have, I guess what I'm saying is that's another factor for us to consider, is that we don't have the setup at our town garage to maybe do some of the maintenance.
I think one of the thoughts was taken to the dealers was that if the dealer services it and something craps out, it's they can't void the warranty. And if Jimmy Potter fixes it and does the service down here and then something does break, I suppose they could question whether it was the right kind of oil.
Right.
So the trucks are so expensive that I think the town went that route.
Yeah.
So the two trucks that were traded in, were they 5 years old when they were traded in?
They were seven.
Seven.
They were both seven.
Okay. I mean, it seems to me like the issue we're kind of talking about is, there's the electronics issue, the maintenance issue, but also trying to determine whether there's an increased depreciation. If we hold on to these things for two more years, there would be a disadvantage, you know, like an accelerated depreciation or something like that, if we stick with it for two more years. So Are we getting the most value on the trade-in that we possibly can after 5 years? and keeping the thing through the warranty. And it seems to me like that would, in my mind, be our goal, right, is to try and reach the highest trade-in value possible on these things when we're ready to get rid of them.
Yeah, so I think it might be worth, if we can find out, I'm not sure we can, but it might be good to get some data points on, we now know, because we've got real data points here, what the trade-in value is after 7 years, because we know the exact numbers from these two purchases. What we don't know is what the trade-in value would be if we traded in at 5.
Yeah.
How much more, like to your point, Hunter, is there an accelerated depreciation after 5? You know, what's the difference in resale value or trade-in value rather, at 5 versus 7? Is it, I mean, I'm just throwing numbers out there, but is it, you know, we're buying a truck that on the six wheeler anyway, that was 159. So I'm just going to do some rough math here. And this is not going to be precise because I don't have the original numbers. But even looking at,
there's no Kelly's Blue Book for 10 wheelers out there, right? I mean,
there's got to be something.
I think we might do better on the 10 wheelers, Hunter, only because a lot of people use 10 wheelers to haul stuff from Lebanon, crushed gravel around and stuff. And so the trucks that we've been buying, the six wheelers with all the snowplow crap on them and everything else, it isn't cost effective for those guys to go down and pick up stuff. They can't get enough on it to really pay. So that I think part of the reason we went with the 10 wheeler was we thought that there might be a bigger demand for a used 10 wheeler than there's a demand for a used six wheeler. But I don't know whether that was based on a guess or whether it was based upon fact. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So it was 35%.
I guess the one thing, Scott, that we haven't really talked about too much, and that is the reliability issue. And you know, these trucks, when they don't get serviced here, and I don't know where the international place was, but one of the places was up in Burlington that I think the Western Star got serviced.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off, John. That was one of the things we changed in these current truck purchases, is we're not going all the way up to wherever it was anymore for service.
But to talk a little bit more, what Hunter's comment was that if you keep, I've got a truck here that's a 2003, and so that's 17 years old. So I think there would be something to say that if Pomfret wanted to keep the trucks for 10 or 15 years, you know, we're eating up a lot of the depreciation. The depreciation's heavy on the vehicle the first year, second year, third year, fourth year, fifth year. So squeaking out two more years, you really don't get the bang for the buck if you wanted to gamble. And I guess I can do that as a private individual, but I've kept this truck and I've had a lot of repairs on it, but there's other people that drive old trucks, like Billy Emmons and my sister has an old one that's a 2005. I'm not sure the town wants to do that, but I'm not so sure going from 5 to 6 or 5 to 7 that you gain enough to take the risk of being out of warranty. But that's just
yeah, I think when we line this up, I think we want to identify all these factors. Like we want to identify what would we possibly gain by holding him for 7 versus 5. Like what are the pros and cons to that?
Right. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
And to me, I have an idea of what some of those are, but I think when we're building out our model, we'll want to frame all that stuff out. Cause part of what I think factors into it is, and there is data on this that we can put in there, that is that we also, I don't know how real this is. I mean, I know it's real. I don't know how big of a problem it is, but there comes a point where I know this is one of the concerns if Jimmy Potter were on this call right now, he'd probably say this to us. He'd say, well, yeah, but if you start having more downtime on the truck after 5 years because the electronics are out or whatever, and now suddenly at year five, the truck is spending even a day or two of downtime during the summer, it's not a big deal. But if you have a truck that's down for a day or two in the winter, and especially during the snowstorm, you're in trouble.
Yep.
So, to me, when we kind of line this up, that's the kind of stuff we want to talk about is to whatever extent we can gather data, say, well, we can't quantify it, but there is that risk if you hold it for longer that you're going to run into these scenarios that no one can really truly predict with accuracy, but might occur where a truck goes down at the wrong time.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, John, I have a 10 and a 12 year old car, and I like my strategy on personal vehicles is I try to drive them until there's absolutely nothing left of them. Right. I got to pay someone to come take them away for me. But I think here, you know, where these things are in service constantly, you know, day to day, and we've got a whole town depending on them. What's our risk tolerance? I think it's, you know, we should be just playing it as safe as possible and not exposing ourselves to any unnecessary risk and holding these things beyond the warranty period or, you know, or whatever.
Right.
If you look at Chippers or you look at Chase Site Services, you don't see too many clunkers that Chippers right. are driving around. And so it's probably the cost of doing business. And in a way, Pomfret is providing a service, and you take Howe Hill, pretty steep hill with a lot of curves on it. If that's not sanded properly and somebody comes down through there in the winter because the trucks broke down, that's not a good thing, as Scott mentioned. But the other thing that I think, if we're on the capital budget committee, you would think that maybe we would want to have the reserve funds in the bank at the end of 5 years. And the select board, we're looking forward as to what we think might happen. Obviously, in 5 years, they will be looking backwards to what did happen over the 5 years and what they might project. So they might decide, the select board might decide to keep a truck longer than five. But if the money's not in the bank, then, you know, then they're kind of say, well, we got to wait another couple of years for the reserve funds to equal the cost, or I suppose they could borrow the money or do something else. But
yeah,
I would think we'd want to be on the front end of the curve from a budget point of view. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, our general approach on dump trucks has always been cash. And if we found ourselves, I mean, just for the sake of argument, if we said seven and then the select board said, gosh, I know the plan said seven, but we're looking at the condition of the vehicle and it's 6 years, we're gonna buy a new one now, a year early. And even if we're short, we're not gonna be short by much. And either there's a lot of different ways to fund that difference. One is through a rainy day reserve, which arguably that would count as an unanticipated expenditure. But the other is you can always secure a note for whatever the difference is. It's not going to be a huge amount of money. So there are different strategies, I guess, that even if the money's not all there in the bank, there are different strategies to make up for the difference. But by and our but to confirm, our approach from day one has always been, as it relates to the dump trucks, we take basically a cash approach.
So let me ask you the question. We got your meeting, the next meeting, the select board's meeting, I believe is on the 7th or 8th. Is that correct?
Something like that.
And then you're going to apparently appoint at least John and Neil and maybe, is it Burgess? What's your first name?
Maybe Susan. Yeah, maybe. If she's still interested.
At least hasn't been on the last couple of calls, but that doesn't mean she's not interested. And so maybe the earliest that we could actually vote on this particular issue might be the Tuesday after the 8th, which is, let's see, that would be October the
12th or 13th.
October the 13th. So what is it that we need? What, as Hunter said, we're in the data gathering phase. What is it that we want to gather on this issue so that we can make an intelligent decision?
Yeah, good question. I mean, what occurs to me offhand is we want to find out, are there any manufacturer extended warranties? We think we know the answer, but we should double check.
Yeah, I think so. We would want to check just, you know, standard best practices too. If we can gather information from other towns, or even, you know, I mean, this is an interesting question, John. You know, when you reference Chase and, you know, mentioned the reliance of the town on these vehicles and, you know, being without one for a couple of days in the wintertime could be a bad thing. And like, I do a lot of work with Kevin McNamara over in Plainfield at KUA. And he's got Max Trucking and Excavating, where I know he's got a bunch of 10 wheelers too. And they always look brand new. And especially with those guys, I mean, if they're without a vehicle for any period of time, a week or something, that could be damaging to their businesses for sure. So it's almost more important for them. But I mean, this is one of those arguments that sort of, it's not a financially, well, it could be, could translate it into, you know, what would happen if we had to rent or, I don't know, what would we do if we were down a truck in a bad snowstorm? How would we resolve that?
Well, yet all the other towns would probably have the vehicles that they'd be using theirs, and these trucks are so built to order. It's like taking them 4 months or 5 months to build the truck with the tilting body and the sander in it and the wing for the plow and, I mean, hydraulic cables out the back to run stuff. Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty custom job, which is the sad thing that it doesn't last longer. But
this is what has happened over the past couple of years is we have the one ton that, and it's not ideal, but what we've done is if we're down a truck, one of the three, the one ton does the blacktop.
Yeah.
So we just put the one ton on the blacktop and then the two other trucks do the back roads. So in a pinch, you can do the blacktop with the one ton. It's not ideal, but it works. Mm-hmm. So we can absorb downtime. We certainly don't want it, and we certainly can't absorb a long period of downtime, but if we're down a truck, because that is basically the practice we put in place is just to put the plow on the one ton and do the blacktop.
Okay,
I'm sorry, Hunter.
Oh, go ahead, John.
Asked how many we had? I was trying to get my.
We've got four trucks that are capable of plowing. Three of them are dump truck style. You know, they're, I guess you would call them medium duty trucks. I don't know if John Moore, would you call him heavy duty or medium duty?
I'd call him medium, because I think one of the issues is to get on a lot of these back roads. You can't have a really heavy duty, big truck that just a lot of the back roads, it's too big.
Right.
Especially to plow snow in the winter. So I think they tried to, and maybe that gets a little bit to the comment Lynn Bertram made, is because they are medium duty that they don't hold up as well. So,
yeah.
So I think that if we have the ability to absorb downtime, then that could potentially support the argument for keeping these trucks a little longer, and, you know, taking some risks. So then the question is there any financial advantage to trading it at 5 years as opposed to seven?
Right.
You know, trade-in value. And I guess trying to do a little research on that somehow, it would just be interesting to see what a difference 2 years could make with that.
Yeah, I think that's valuable to try and get some numbers on that. I mean, we can talk to the vendor. There's probably some research out there on that. So
one thought I have, and I hope you guys don't mind me jumping in here, tell me to shut up if you want me to, but is, you know, with cars, right, you can always find that sweet spot. The sweet spot for cars is 3 years, and that's why all the dealerships offer incentives to do a three-year lease. So they want you to lease the car for 3 years, turn it in like everybody that leases does. Nobody ever buys out their lease, and they've now got a car at its peak trade-in value or resale value. So the question would be, what's the incented period for these trucks if you were to lease them? I'm not suggesting we would, but if we were, you know, do they want you to lease for 5 years, 3 years, 7 years? You know, that might give you an idea of where's that drop off in the trade-in value.
Yeah, that's a really good point, John, is we could actually infer from talking to someone about leases what that sweet spot is, just as you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting, John, because I'm just thinking, you know, depending on what we find out, I mean, we could make the determination that it makes more sense to trade these things in after 3 years instead of 5 years, right? I mean,
maybe, yeah.
Who knows? I mean, if we're basing it on maximum trade-in value, maybe we're trading our trucks out even sooner than 5 years.
I think when we kind of sum this up, all of our data points that we'll look at should be whatever the sweet spot is, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from a reliability standpoint. Like, where's that X mark that hits where we don't start running into more serious reliability issues versus, you know, what the trade-in value, all that stuff. But, you know, I think we can probably piece that together from doing a little more research.
That is a good point, John. The only cold water I possibly would consider throwing on that versus when you buy a lease car traded at 3 years, that's a standard car that comes off the shelf and there's not a lot of customization. The question would be, would the town want to go through buying these? If you figure that drives 38,000 miles roughly in 7 years, so you're driving it probably
6 to 7 a year.
So you'd have in 3 years, like 18,000, it'd be pretty much a new truck. And you might get more for it, but you would have, I don't know what the cost is, Scott, for all the labor putting on that dump body and all the cables and wires and under, you know, scraper blades and so forth, but it's got to be custom for the town. I mean, it's not standard off the shelf stuff.
Well, some of it is and some of it isn't. So there are some things that Jimmy and Steve, through his experience, thought would be kind of more, I don't want to say personalized, but more to the liking of the road crew. And then some of those things are pretty standard. So it's sort of a mix. It's not entirely custom. Some of it is for sure.
I think probably this discussion on at least 3 years would probably be for something for other than this next year's budget, because they just paid $9,180 on both of these vehicles to increase the warranty to 5 years. So they're not going to, well, I guess that would go with the truck.
Yeah, it would go with the truck.
And I didn't mean to imply 3 years was a good period at all. I was just using that as an example for cars, but I would hope these trucks have a longer life than a car does, but I don't know.
Yeah, and I wasn't suggesting that we consider 3 years. I think the point is, what's interesting is just finding what is that sweet spot, right? I mean, it would be interesting to figure out what that is.
Well, I haven't looked at it in a couple of years, but there are, and maybe even some of the vendors we are dealing with now might also have a lease option. So we could talk to them just to get an idea, just as John is suggesting, that might give us an indication what that sweet spot is.
And is it, and I guess the question is, can you lease one of these vehicles with all the custom stuff on it? Do they offer a lease? I guess that's the question. And the other is that if you went with the 3-year deal, you wouldn't have to pay the $9,000, and your trading value would be quite a bit better.
I'll have to go back and check the specs, but I feel like we went more basic with the specs on these new trucks than we did last time.
You didn't get the four-wheel drive stuff, so that's...
Well, that's for sure. But if you remember, John... the Western Star, I mean, the Western Star was a custom job.
John, what was that 9,000 you referenced? Is that the extended warranty?
Yeah, that was what Scott, before you came on board, I think Scott mentioned that they paid
for the 9,180 for a 5-year extended warranty.
Okay.
I think that Western Star, though, the reason they bought that is the scraper blade had to go underneath one of these trucks, and the only truck that had enough freeboard, if that's the right word, or clearance to put the scraper blade on it was the Western Star.
Right.
And did they trade the one with the scraper blade on it this time or not?
Yes.
Oh, they did. Okay. So I guess.
Actually, you mean this Western Star?
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's going until next time.
So the question is going to be, will one of the internationals with local service be able to have a scraper blade underneath it?
I think I recall that it will, I'd have to double check.
Okay.
I think Jimmy and Steve did a good job speccing these new trucks from what I could tell. They're the experts. So you want to, how about we just walk through some of the things we want to gather information on?
Warranty is one.
Warranty is one.
After the 5 years, if it's manufacturer or third party, and what does it include?
Right. We want to do a little data collection on best practices out there. We want to run down the lease scenario.
Yep.
I actually, just to kind of round out, I think it'd be good to find out from Jimmy what kind of downtime they had the last two seasons.
Yeah.
Just so we have that as data points.
And then if there's any way to figure out what a trade-in value for a truck similar to ours is after 3 years, 5 years, and 7 years, probably, right?
Yep. And then I'm going to try and run down information on, getting a better grip on these perceived electronics issues that is part of driving the question. It may not matter much, but I think it might just be helpful to get a better understanding, like what are those electronic issues and how widespread are they? What else?
I think one of the problems with the electronic issues is that a lot of these service mechanics that are out there are mechanics that can fix mechanical things, not electronic things.
Right.
And the electronics aren't probably as quite as sophisticated at this point as the spaceships and things like that. So when there's a problem with it, the dealership doesn't really know how to handle it so much, I guess.
Okay.
And it's a time consuming to trace some of them down, but
is that kind of what you think it is, John, that they're more focused on the mechanical aspects?
Yeah, I think a lot of these mechanics that are around are, you know, they can change oil and they can do brake jobs and that sort of thing. But when it gets to electronics, it's a whole nother kind of person that you need.
That's not a very, yeah, I mean, I believe you, but that doesn't say a lot for the dealers. Since these are dealer maintained trucks. What other things should we go run down? I mean, we're just talking dump trucks at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a good list.
Yeah, it's probably enough.
I mean, once we pin down the dump trucks, then we can get into the longer life discussion on grader, excavator, so forth.
Grader
is going to be the big one, I think.
What do you mean by best practices, I guess? Define what you're looking for there.
I mentioned that. Just what other towns, municipalities are doing in terms of, you know, how long they're keeping their trucks. If there's any standards, you know, like 5 years, 7 years, whatever. The John, you said you talked to Bridgewater and they said five. So maybe that's it. I just was curious, like, to know what owner towns are doing. If they've arrived at any conclusions that, you know, one period of time is better than another for whatever reason.
I was kind of shocked on Bridgewater because I think Bridgewater at one point bought our grader and when we traded it. And so I thought they're going to probably be driving clunkers up there, you know, but so I was a little shocked to hear what I heard, to be honest, but
yeah. Well, cool. I think that was pretty good progress.
So I'm trying to look at our meetings. We got today's the 29th. So we're meeting.
I set it up for every week until, I can't remember how far into October I set it up for.
Yeah, we didn't put that in the minutes how we arrived at our, we created a deadline.
We took
the board meeting and backed it up like 5 weeks from there or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I think what I put in the minutes, I think is accurate. I said the first select board meeting in November to have our plan done.
Yeah, it seemed to me, I remember we had maybe five weeks or 5 to 7 weeks of meetings.
Oh, wait, actually, you know what? It's coming back to me better now. John Moore, I think this is what you said, and I think this is what we agreed on, that we can target getting our complete plan done by December with the buildings and so forth, but we should target the highway capital plan to be done by that first meeting in November so that the select board's not waiting on us in case they're big changes that need to be made appropriation-wise for vehicles.
Right. So it was November 18th, I think, was the select board meeting. So we were saying that the 17th was when we should have something together.
Yeah, let me bring up the calendar here. So the select board meeting would be on November 18th. And I guess, did we say 17th, did we say, or did we say before that? We said sometime, I know it was sometime in November. I think what I recall now, we said that we would get the vehicle plan done locked and tight by November so that the select board didn't have to wait on us for that piece of it. That's what I'm now remembering. It's probably in the recording too. I could listen to it.
So could we work on finalizing a plan on the 17th, or is that too 11th hour? I mean, the day before the meeting?
I think it'd be better if we finish it the week before.
The 10th.
That way the select board has a week to noodle on it before doing something with it on the 18th.
Yeah. So that gives us, that's six more meetings from now.
And which is perfect, because I just looked at the Zoom schedule and I set it to be a recurring meeting out seven iterations.
Yeah.
So that should cover us. Yeah. Okay. So I set up these Zoom meetings until November 10th.
But does this committee actually present the plan to the select board on the 18th, or do they just vote on it having it in hand previous, you know, prior to that?
It's up to us. We can just deliver it paper and say, here you go, you can read it and do with it what you want. Or what we've traditionally done is we get on the agenda for the select board and then we actually present it to them. So what I would recommend we do is that we get it ready for delivery by the 10th, and then get on the agenda for the 18th and just, you know, do a 15-minute presentation on the 18th.
So if we could have enough data to make a decision on the service life of these dump trucks by, say, next week, then we could move on to the graders and the owner stuff after that, right? And I mean, if we start making good time, we could potentially have the whole plan together by the 10th, because the buildings are going to be super straightforward, I think.
That's right. So, yeah.
We're not going to be able to vote on anything until the 13th. We got the meeting next week on the 6th. So I guess we're just going to bang around.
So John, do we have to wait until we get additional members to vote, or can we?
Well, I guess you and I and Scott could vote because we're members, but it was mentioned that Neil and John couldn't really chime in unless they were appointed. So I don't really think it's a big deal, but maybe it is a big deal. I don't know. Maybe they have to be appointed.
Barring anything contentious, I don't know that it's that critical, but just as a kind of formality, we can choose to operate by consensus, right? Rather than formal vote. And that's just a procedural thing. And yeah. That's really kind of what we're doing as a matter of practice, is we're...
Yeah, the only thing we'd be ready to vote on is just the service life of the dump trucks. I mean, right?
Exactly. So...
So we could just do a consensus thing and keep going and wait until we have all of our ducks in a row before we vote on it.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
One question on the grader we had in there for 27, the excavator we had in there for 28, the loader we had in there for 25, the tag trailer was in 23, the hot box 30. I mean, some of this stuff is out there for a while, out there for a ways, but do we want to get, I think we need to maybe have Jimmy talk to us at some point about what's happening with the grader, the loader, in those sort of things. And I'm not sure we want to, I mean, the trade-in is going to be between 3 and 7 years. So we'll vote on it at some point, and we can kick around this best practices and all the stuff that you've mentioned, Scott, and we've got manufacturer's warranty, lease, downtime, so forth and so on. And maybe, yeah. Am I pushing it too much if we had Jimmy come in and talk to us on, or we can ask him and get the information without him being there on downtime, or do we want him to come in and give us a blow by blow on the other stuff that we've got to consider at some point?
Personally, I don't think it's a bad idea to have Jimmy come and talk to us. I would rather wait until we've got a little bit more information pulled together.
Okay.
That's fine. Maybe not next week, but maybe the week after, or maybe the week after that. But I kind of like to see us get our footing a little bit more. And then, but certainly having Jimmy come and talk to us would be beneficial.
Yep. Okay. I'm happy to wait. Yep.
I mean, the big question, at least on the grader, is it going to make it to 25 years, you know?
The last discussion I had with Jimmy was he thought that the grader was, I think the more, he mentioned the more critical item is the loader. The loader needs to be there in the winter to work, to load the trucks with sand.
Right.
So, okay. And that's due before the other one, that's due in 25. So he mentioned something in the grader, I think you can get parts for the John Deere, but the wing on the grader was the part that was the one that couldn't get the parts for. But Jimmy wasn't too concerned about the grader. The grader would make it. And I don't know about the loader. I don't know the condition of the loader, or, except the fact that he mentioned that kind of has to be reliable.
Yeah. Okay.
And obviously the tractor with the mower deck, that's brand new, for heaven's sakes. And the excavator, I think he said it's got a couple thousand hours on it, 2400. And so that's still good to go. So, yeah.
He's running the grader more than he has in the past, but that's a good thing, actually.
Yeah, the roads are looking really, really good. And I drove by the town garage the other day. I've never seen it so neat. There's no culvert scattered around. They've painted some of the clapboards that were replaced. It really looked neat. And I think he's doing a good job on the roads. The roads are really finally getting crowned up. They put a lot of material on some of these roads to get the crown, but it'll pay to get the water off the road. So I think he's done a good job.
Is there a, John, it seems like you're obviously looking at a list. I'm wondering, is there something that I could look, you know, publicly available, that's sort of the list of our current equipment and the years that, whatever's on it, the years they were bought, the years that we expected to get rid of them, what we paid for them, that kind of thing. I'm trying to educate myself on, you know, sort of the scope.
Yeah, I'm just reading it off the report that we sent in last year to the select board. So, of course, we can change those times. I'm just reading off the times that we had proposed, and I'm not sure that those. We had a couple different reports that were going around, so those dates may vary depending upon what report you're looking at. But
I'll send you the spreadsheet, John.
Yep.
So the spreadsheet I'm about to send you has three tabs on it. One is sort of an inventory of the equipment and background information on it, like when it was bought, what model year, years in service, purchase price, that kind of thing. And then it's got a couple of, last year we kicked around a couple of scenarios for how to finance it. But this is the last one we worked with. So I'll just send that to you.
Did you send that to me too, Scott?
Yep.
I don't know if I have that or not.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I guess we're all going to watch the debate tonight, huh?
Yeah. Be interesting.
Hey, Hunter, are you going down to Sanibel this winter?
Yeah, if the pandemic allows it.
When do you normally go?
Middle 2 weeks of March.
Oh, good. Well, I
was down there last March, and I was determined to look you up while I was down there. But the third day I was down there, I started into Zoom meetings every day, almost all day, because we had just gone on spring break at school and ended up not bringing any of the students back and had to rent a car and drive with my mother back home. So it turned into not much of a vacation. But
well, let's do it this year. What's the scoop with Kimball Union over there now? They have classes or what?
Oh, yeah, we're hybrid, I guess. We've got about 45 students that are online, but we're fully enrolled. So we've got about 300 students on campus. And yeah, it's going pretty well. We had one positive case, a Spanish student that arrived from Spain. He tested negative before he left, and by the time he got here, he was positive. But that's the only positive test we've had. And you know, we have a handful of students going in and out of quarantine every week because they've got sore throat or runny nose, but none of them are testing positive. So I think we're doing pretty well. Yeah. Holding it all together.
I guess the jury's out how it's going to roll out in the next few months, but I did talk to somebody today that had COVID that didn't go to the hospital. So I said, how you doing? He said, well, I'm doing okay. But he said, my lungs aren't quite back to what they were. So I'm convinced I don't want to get it if I can help it.
Oh, yeah. No, you don't want to get it. No. So, yeah, we'll see what things look like come March. But I would like to get back down there. Are you heading down?
I'm not. Susan's going down on October the 16th. And I'm going to wait till I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I got so much stuff to do here right now, and Susan doesn't have as much stuff to do, so she's getting a little more bored than me. So I don't know. I guess I don't know. Florida opened up everything down there, so who knows what's going to happen now. I don't know.
Right.
That's I don't know. I don't know who to believe.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Scott. It sounds like we're done.
Yeah, anything else we should cover? Okay.
We're good.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Jim.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye.